From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Charlie Herman. This week, the Federal Reserve decided yet again to keep interest rates near zero, but the bank made it very clear that it could raise interest rates this December. We spend a lot of time on the show talking about the central bank. Will it raise interest rates? What does Janet Yellen, the chair of the bank, think about the economy or unemployment or inflation? Nowadays, you pretty much can't talk about the U.S. economy without talking about the Federal Reserve. But there was a time when it didn't exist. The Fed was created just over 100 years ago, and while we've come to accept it as an integral part of our economy, its creation was anything but simple. And many of the same complaints that we hear about the bank, about Wall Street, about finance in general, well, they're the same arguments that were made back when the bank was created. In fact, it's kind of remarkable that the Federal Reserve even exists. Roger Lowenstein is a longtime financial reporter and is the author of the new book, America's Bank: The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. Welcome, Roger.
Charlie, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
So before we even begin, can you explain for me what was the U.S. economy like before the central bank existed?
Well, we're talking about the early 1900s. We were a developed nation by then, industrial power. We were just about having the biggest economy in the world. However, we had a financial system that was really back in the Pony Express era, whereas England, France, all the developed nations around Europe had a central bank. Each of our banks kept their own reserve, their own rainy day money. And whenever there was a crisis, whenever money was tight, they just did the natural thing to protect themselves. They tightened up, called in their loans, and we would have a mini depression or, not infrequently, a major depression.
So this was happening on a regular basis where there'd be depressions.
We had 25 panics over a 25-year period and four or five major depressions.
And when you talk about a major depression, is this similar to what just happened back in 2008?
Yes. I mean, let's talk about exactly 100 years before. In 1907, we had bank runs. And by the way, in 1907, they were real bank runs. They were people running to the bank.
Literally going there and pulling out their money.
Lining up outside, desperately wailing for their savings. And the tellers were there just shelving out the money to them one after another till they ran out. And in that day and age, there was no central bank to make loans to these banks to keep them going. All we had was a guy named J.P. Morgan, who was the country's most eminent financier. And he would decide which banks to try to make loans to. And, this just wasn't enough. One, the country was too big and too advanced at that point for one even very rich financier to try to save the whole financial system.
And when you talk about all these banks that were out there, was there a unified currency or was there a different type of currencies running around that you could – in Indiana, what you had was different than what you had in Georgia?
For much of our history, for most of the 19th century, we had hundreds, even thousands of currencies. Every bank would – all over the country, each bank would issue notes, and these notes would trade as ersatz currency. After the Civil War, the system was somewhat unified, but still each bank would issue its own notes. And we did not have a firm unified currency in the sense that France had the franc or England had the pound.
Well, going into the 1900s, as you mentioned, the U.S. was becoming the world's largest economy, and we did it without having a central bank. So if we were able to still grow that much, why was it even created?
Well, it was created because we had the need for it. I mean, I almost think that the question is, why wasn't it created? And if I can answer that question, Americans had a peculiar antipathy towards a central bank. This happened after Hamilton created the first national bank way back in the era of George Washington. That was abandoned. We quickly realized that we needed a central bank because of all the problems that we had during the War of 1812. We created a second bank called the Second Bank of the United States. Andrew Jackson got rid of that. Basically, whenever in our history this came up, people feared having a big, powerful bank. This is our history, rebelling against an English king, having a strong power source. And in particular, people were afraid of a strong power source in Washington or on Wall Street. And they thought, gee, get the government involved in banking and this is just going to take over our lives. And people were afraid of it.
So then how did the central bank come about? How was the Federal Reserve created?
The person who was really front and center in doing it was a guy named Paul Warburg, who had come over here, not surprisingly, from somewhere else, from Germany, where they had a central bank. He was a financier who emigrated here as in his late 30s, and he was astonished. Believe it or not, every year in New York during the harvest season, cash would drain from the banks out of the cities into the countryside so they could finance the harvest, pay farmhands, things like that. And there would be a mini money panic in New York. Interest rates would soar because there was no money in New York.
So there'd literally be this cycle of you'd have money in the bank, and then every fall, farmers would say, we need money to go, you know, get the crops.
Money would drain out, and interest rates in New York would go up to 50, 80, sometimes over 100%. And Warburg said this is, you know, a disgrace to a civilized community. And while he was still quite new to the country, he wrote a paper suggesting that America adopt something like the Bank of England or the Reichsbank in Germany, the Banque de France. And he was warned not to circulate this because the idea was so unpopular in America that, you know, would get his career off on the wrong foot in this country. And it wasn't until 1907 when we had a panic that people came back to him. And, you know, one gentleman particularly, the head of the National City Bank, said, Warburg, where's your paper? People realized that maybe he had a point.
So then how did it go from an idea, a concept, to actually something that there's legislation passed and that it becomes the Federal Reserve that we know today?
With great difficulty. The best example I can give you is there was a senator named Nelson Aldrich who was a defender of the old system, not the central bank system. After this panic, though, he became curious. He led a congressional study tour over to Europe, and he interviewed bankers there, Germany, France, England, and he became intrigued. And finally, he became a convert to the central bank idea. But rather than just go back to his desk in Washington and legislate it, the idea was so unpopular that he called a bunch of bankers together, including Warburg, invited them onto his private rail car, which left just out by the Hoboken rail yards here, you know, on the side of the river from New York. They went down.
Yeah, you talk about that in the book with the blinds drawn, so nobody would know where they were going.
Nobody knew where they were going, and nobody really knew exactly what they were doing. There were about six of them on this trip. They went to a very exclusive duck hunting club at which J.P. Morgan was a member down in Georgia, off the coast of Georgia on an island. Morgan had cleared the place out for just this crew. And there, in absolute secrecy, they wrote what became the first draft of the Federal Reserve Act. But that's how unpopular it was. That's how secretive they had to be about it.
But I can't imagine that doing something that secretive was also necessarily something that would engender a lot of support.
Well, you know, word didn't get out. We're talking about 1910, and no one knew for till long after the Federal Reserve Act was enacted that this had occurred. However, people knew that Aldrich was close to bankers. They suspected that any plan that he came up with would somehow be linked to Wall Street, and it was at first rejected. And Aldrich was Republican. When the Democrats were elected in 1912 in the person of Woodrow Wilson, the idea was so unpopular that Wilson, although he was a supporter of Aldrich's basic idea, which was to create a central bank, he had to say in the stump everywhere, I'm against the idea of a central bank. They had to somehow think of a way to pass the legislation and make it look like they were doing something other than passing a central bank, which is what they were doing.
So then how did it eventually get passed?
Well, if you look at the central bank, you know, people might wonder, why do we have, in effect, 12 central banks? We have a Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, a Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, a Federal Reserve Bank of New York, 12 around the country where, you know, in England, there's just Central Bank of England. And the reason was that Wilson was sage enough to realize that in the American political tradition, the Federalist model was the one that people would embrace.
And having a balance of national and state, national
exactly,
and local.
The same compromise that was worked in the U.S. Constitution between states' rights, local rights, and central power. That was the way to go. You know, for that reason, I call this the economic equivalent to the Constitution.
So because the bank that we have here is very different than what you see in other countries, how does it work? How does it operate?
Well, in the very beginnings of the Federal Reserve, it didn't operate very well because power was so dispersed around and no one really knew where the reins of power were. For instance, in the Depression in particular, which was only about 15 years after the Fed was enacted, it wasn't clear whether the Federal Reserve Bank of New York was in charge, whether the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, other Federal Reserve banks, and the Fed was very ineffective, which is one reason why the Depression lasted so long and was so acute. Now, power is quite clearly has devolved into Washington's hands. And during the recent crisis, when there was a problem, you know, Ben Bernanke was able to say, we got a problem, and we're going to start lending to banks so that they don't fail, so that there aren't bank runs. Well, and it worked better.
Well, having a central bank is pretty much an accepted norm in most developed countries, but here we still have this strain that is opposed to it or that questions it, that does not like this centrality, the very fact that this is exactly what they worried, that this federalist system would get usurped by one central power, this being the Federal Reserve Board in Washington. Why does that continue to exist, you think, in this country?
Charlie, it's a great point, and I just think, you know, an illustration of that is if you ask why people are mad at the Fed today, and they are mad, it's not because the Fed failed to intervene and failed to save the system in 2008. It's because they did intervene and did save the system, and which was exactly the purpose that they were created for. I think this really goes back to our roots, where people who rebelled against the King of England, a distant king. Ever since then, we've had this, you know, very strong Jeffersonian strain that's opposed to any centralized power source. And on the other side, there's a, you know, Hamiltonian side in American politics that says, no, we need a strong central government with democratic checks, to be sure. And I think sometimes the anti-federalist side gets the better of things or overdoes it. You know, you see the Republican Party today can't even elect a speaker because they're divided over whether to shut down the U.S. government. They don't do things like that in France.
Well, when you look at sort of the history of the country, there seem to be a lot of contradictions. I mean, there always seems to be a little bit of this. We hate it, and yet at the same time, we do benefit from having a strong currency, a strong economy, the benefits of what a central bank can provide.
So this is very visible in the period I write about, in the 1880s, 90s, and 1900s, because the people who were unhappiest with this system were farmers. Farmers by then weren't a small group. They were more than half the country. We were just on a gold standard. There wasn't enough money in circulation because of the limitations of the gold standard, which meant prices were low, farmers couldn't get enough money for their crops and so on. And they really would have benefited by a central bank that could have said, hey, we need more money in circulation. However, farmers, people out in the countryside, people in rural areas were extremely wary of a central bank because that was going to be off in New York or Washington. That was a big, bad, ugly, powerful central bank.
One of the things that stood out to me in the book is that you document this real fear and hatred of Wall Street by farmers, by people who are not in the East, especially the Northeast. But at times when reading it, it felt like a lot of the commentary that you do continue to hear to this day. When you were writing the book, did you sort of see those parallels, or is that parallelism something I'm just applying a 2015 sensibility to, or is it there?
No, it's remarkable to me how much has continued. And although the party labels have certainly switched in the 1890s, early 1900s, the Democrats were the party of laissez-faire. They were basically a party of Southern Democrats then. They were opposed to any kind of federal rule. And nowadays, of course, it'd be Tea Party Republicans that are the most antagonistic to the central government. The geography hasn't changed. One of the foremost opponents of the central bank was Congressman Charles Lindbergh, father of the aviator from Minnesota, very populist. He represented the same district back in his day that recently was held by Michelle Bachmann, the Tea Party activist. So it's the same rural centers, Midwestern, Southern, that are most wary of New York, Washington, power centers back east. I think that's just a dynamic of the country.
When you look at the founding of the Federal Reserve, now it is so connected to interest rates. Was that what its central goal was when it was created back in 1913?
No, the central goal was really to be a lender of last resort, to prevent exactly the sort of episode that we had in 2008, or if we had one, to prevent it from getting out of hand. And, although a lot has changed, I think that if the founders could come back, they would feel gratified at knowing that when we had this crisis, the institution they created was there to stop the damage.
This book is a bit of a change for you. You've written a lot about current financial issues, financial crashes, crises, and this is more historical. How was this experience of writing this book that was not about something that just happened in the past couple of years?
Well, I really loved it. Of course, it was different in the sense that I wasn't interviewing anybody. I was reading letters and buried in archives. I got to live with people like Teddy Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson. And it's so interesting that they had the same tensions that we talked about, but in a different era. For instance, the Federal Reserve Act, a lot happened in the summer of 1913 because Washington was so hot. Wilson's rather delicate wife, Ellen, shipped off to New Hampshire where it was cooler. So you got to see what Wilson was thinking because he was writing his wife on a daily basis, and you got to read his letters. And that's the kind of experience that you don't have as a journalist, to get to hear what the president is thinking day by day. I just loved it.
What stuck out for you the most, sitting in 2015, finishing this book and looking back to more than 100 years ago of the founding of the bank, the similar issues that people were facing then, and also the differences, that what is not similar?
Well, one difference, I guess, and it made me almost a little sad, is they had this terrible controversy back then. It was the bill was terribly divisive. Bankers, farmers, Republicans, Democrats, people were really divided. And yet under the leadership of Wilson and legislators like Carter Glass of Virginia, at the end of the day, they got it done. And it was accepted by all parties. It was saluted by people who had been opponents, people who had been supporters as an improvement. They tackled a serious problem. They arrived at a compromise that worked, and they got the job done. And sometimes you wonder, is the political system today still capable of doing that?
Well, that's to my question of if we needed to create a Federal Reserve today, do you think that would be possible compared to 100 years ago?
You know, there are bills in Congress now that are going the other direction that would seek to strip the Fed of its authority, strip of it its independence. They want it to be under the subjugation of Congress on a day-to-day basis. Charlie, I really don't know if we want the people who are setting interest rates to be answering to Congress day in, day out. Frankly, I don't really think elected officials would want to take on the responsibility when they go to see their constituents for every, you know, up or down movement in interest rates. But the Fed is so unpopular that that's the direction we're heading.
When you came to the end of writing this book, did you form an opinion one way or the other of are you pro-Federal Reserve or do you have questions about the way that it's organized and run?
Look, the Federal Reserve is an institution. It's never any better than the people in it. They've made terrible mistakes. I alluded to the mistakes they made during the Depression, and they made mistakes going into the 2008 crash, mainly by not seeing how risky all these mortgage loans were and doing something to prevent it. That said, you know, the main argument of the book is that we needed a Federal Reserve then, and by extension, I would say we need it now.
Roger Lowenstein is the author of America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. Roger, thank you very much.
Charlie, it's been a real pleasure.
And I am Charlie Herman, and you've been listening to Money Talking from WNYC.